Okay, we're starting the Public Safety Advisory Board meeting at 6 o'clock p.m. on Monday, the 22nd of June, 2015. And present is Mike Stradley.
Shane Boyle.
Chuck Baldwin.
Tom Friedland.
Brenda Perry.
Dennis Ritchie.
Randy Krebs.
Mike Francis.
Christine Steele.
Grant Oakes.
Okay, we're going to start with Shane. He's going to, I'm just going to let him go because he's got a bunch of stuff he's going to talk about. This is, you know, one of the things we wanted to get right out there is we've talked a little bit separately, but not in, in an actual board meeting, about starting to look for and write some grants. And also emergency preparedness and this place as an EOC and kind of some of the things that have been done already by the city and some of the things that grant writing could assist with. So go ahead, Shane.
Well, thank you, Mike. So I thought I'd start by just kind of getting you guys up to speed on where we are at in the taking advantage of this building as our emergency operations center as a starting point. With the building coming online in September of last year, it opened up the opportunity for us to start preparing to relocate technology assets to this building to enable this building to become our primary EOC fully and functional. Right now, we do not have enough technology assets in this building to successfully mount a, shall we say, a magnitude 9 earthquake type preparedness response. We would have, we'd be operating on pen and paper effectively because we don't have the assets down here to support kind of that digital information piece associated with it. So some areas in which IT is identified, we have kind of three areas that we need to approach the relocation of the kind of the assets to support the EOC, and those are our networking infrastructure, things like internet access, file server access, kind of the wires, as you would say, that our communications run on. The second category is the server infrastructure that we have that would be required to supply information to people here at the building or out in the wind to support, you know, mounting emergency operations. And then finally, disaster recovery, business continuity. If for some reason the disaster were to impact this facility, we need to have duplication of those core services at another city facility that would allow us to mount a secondary or operate our secondary emergency operations center. So anything to do with EOC on the technology side, I kind of put together into those three categories of area that we need to be concerned about. And obviously, working with Randy, we developed the written policies and procedures around using these different assets, whether we're here at a different physical city location. So,
is there anything existing now that would meet the criteria that you're talking about that we have in place as an EOC?
So let's just be clear. I said a magnitude 9, all cellular networks are down, fiber optic networks are down, those kinds of things. Yeah, we do not have the information that we would need.
Not a point of transferring something to this facility. It's a matter of creating something that could meet that criteria at some future point.
Well, no, we have the material at a different facility. We need to bring it to this facility because if those communication lines go down, all of that stuff would be self-contained in this building, and we could operate on generator power, accessing those resources here, and sending out crews as necessary. Right now, we rely on the wires to get to that information stored in another city building.
I think his question, Shane, was, do we have that capability?
Yeah, do we have an EOC capability to that level now?
Yes, we do at City Hall. City Hall has that capability. Now, the thing we have to be concerned about is the seismic stability of that building. It's, 15, 20 years old?
Yeah.
So that building's ability to survive a magnitude 9, we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a variable. If the building survives, it's occupiable, it's got a generator, we could, you know, successfully leverage those assets there. Now, if things go as I've planned with budget spend, we should have those core assets located down here within this fiscal year. FY16.
Is there a satellite system at City Hall?
There's currently no satellite communication. Now, I did work with the Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue to implement a line of sight radio system. So what that means is that we have a tower up at the top of City Hall and a Motorola 800 megahertz radio. And what TVFNR can do is they can send a man to the building, and then they can relay calls between our two fire stations here and command at Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue. So we do have the ability for TVFNR and possibly our police force over shortwave 800 megahertz to coordinate, and that would even include our operations people because they run 800 megahertz radios as well.
Do they have satellite?
No, they don't have satellite. Well, they may have satellite in their command facilities, but not up at City Hall is what I'm getting
at. But I say, does TVFNR have satellite in each one of their facilities?
I would assume they would have some satellite capability somewhere. If Clackamas County and their Emergency Operations Center does, I would assume TVFNR does. That would be a question for TVFNR to speak directly to. But we have the ability to mount our two fire stations, coordinate them in the city from City Hall if we need to.
So, Shane, when they put in the third fire station, are they going to be planning with this in mind, you know, to put facilities up there?
So that's a very good question. I have no visibility on the addition of the third fire station. I think it'd probably be a good thing to have some conversations with their team about
that. They're in planning. You know they're in planning for that.
I would need to get
Have they chosen a site yet? I thought they had.
Not that I'm aware of. They very well may have, but not that I'm aware of.
They've got one of two because they want to be up on the hill. So it'll be up on the hill, be Hidden Springs area, they think. So I know they've got a couple of sites they were finalizing. So it's moving along. It's coming.
They've got some property right off Hidden Springs and Rosemont. I don't know if that's what they're
looking at. That's one of the ones they're looking at.
Going back to the issue here, the idea, I assume, is to make this facility the EOC based on its seismic capability, and you'd create a second dairy location at some point, or would you let it remain in City Hall and just duplicate here?
Well, the good news is that we've reached a refresh point on some of our IT hardware infrastructure. And what that means is that I've had to purchase new infrastructure for here to host our servers. The infrastructure that is currently hosting our servers that will no longer host our, you know, host them primarily, we can use them as backup systems.
Yeah.
We virtualize primarily most of our servers. If you guys are familiar with virtualization technology, it allows us to run 15, 20 servers on one piece of hardware, and we can duplicate them onto other hardware very, very easy and efficiently.
But going back to where we had started, I'm gathering within the next fiscal year, the idea is to transfer primary EOC responsibility to this facility in the event of a disaster, and that you would have a secondary location, assuming this did not function. Mm-hmm. And would that be at a location other than City Hall?
So
you leave everything in place since that is already in an EOC capacity?
At this time, secondary at City Hall would be preferred because we have generator support there.
And it's already there.
We do not have generator support at the library, though it is unfunded in their capital plan. The Adult Community Center lacks so much IT infrastructure, network ports, things like that. That building would not be a good choice for secondary EOC.
That's what I'm saying.
EOC.
What you have right now is serving as that capacity. You're just shifting, in essence, the primary location to here. That would be the secondary, and everything is pretty much already up to speed.
Our operations building might be an option, but we've got some work to do this year. It would make sense
since that's already in place to worry about getting this primary and then secondary at some point.
Sure.
Okay.
I hate to be a kind of a wet blanket, but I was there when that building was, Herb Cost built that building before the city got it.
Okay.
And it's not built for any big earthquake. It's not structurally sound for that.
Yeah, I don't think we have an alternative on that.
Yeah.
That's up to code on our earthquake provisions. So
actually, the Bolton Station isn't either. It's right down there, practically on top of the fault. The only other building that's public would be the fire station right next to us here, because it was built more up to code.
Well, so. I think the current fiscal concern is to make the move to here and then deal with the secondary at some point.
Right.
So what else? Where are we going next?
So this fiscal year, FY15, I was successful in getting Clackamas County to deliver dark fiber to our building here, which will eventually allow this building to be our primary internet site, our primary connectivity to Clackamas County, EOC, Clackamas County Sheriff's Office. So I've already got into play the movement of the network infrastructure to this building to make that to make this place probably the most successful at communicating with the county resources, which would be who we'd be partnering with to mount a response.
What do you call it, dark fiber?
The reason it's called dark fiber is that it's not it's owned by the county and not owned by Comcast or anybody else.
Right.
And dark is more of an indication of who's allowed on it, more so than anything. So the lines that we have installed here, nobody else would be communicating on those lines, just us. So if I install more dark fiber into our library building, our operations building, our city hall building, we could have a communications ring within the city that would allow for, you know, unintrusive communications on those lines without private sector having any say on how we use them.
Those are basically wires and cables.
They're you ever seen those lamps where the little lights come out of them? They're those little fiber strands. That's effectively fiber optic cable, right? So following, we've got the networking pretty close to dialed in. We'll start moving servers next fiscal year into the infrastructure down here, and hopefully by the end of FY16, we'll be in a spot where we'll have our disaster recovery as well taken care of. So we're pushing in this next fiscal year to complete that transition of EOC down to here and then have our backup site up and functional as well. So I think kind of giving you guys kind of an idea of where we're at on that, the kind of the next topic to speak about was coming back to the grant writing. You guys were interested in pursuing grant writing to help with emergency operations planning. So obviously some of these emergency operation preparations, whether they're technology or non-technology related, these are areas you guys can help if you want to go after the money in the form of grants versus, you know, city finances. I think you had brought in some information on organizations that'll help us write grants.
There's an organization called SCORE, and what it is a group of executives who have pooled their skills into a volunteer group to help small businesses, and they give local workshops and things like that also. However, I talked to the lady after the presentation and asked her if she does grant writing. She had talked about grant writing during it. And I said, you know, we have a citizens advisory group that works with the city and with the police, and would they be allowed to work with a group like that that's not a small business but a public, generally a public body? And she said, absolutely. And she said, I would like to take that one on myself because it sounds really challenging. And she said she had heard that there's a lot of Homeland Security money out there looking for a home, and that Greg
Swanson
is kind of a contact man with the satellite phone, and he would be glad to join. We could get a team of three or four of us together, meet with these people, and get going on that grant writing to get a satellite system for here. And if we wanted a duplication, we'd include it in that grant for another building. And it makes a lot of sense to have two of them, actually.
So first we'll talk about the grant aspect, and I've got some other information around the satellite phones for you guys as well.
Sure.
We have access to a tool. We have a 5-user license for this. One of your police officers, police sergeants, actually has one of those licenses.
Murph Corbin.
And I'll direct you up to the projector screen there.
Murph uses it primarily for DUI grant writing and seatbelt stuff, but we have access to this tool, which is a pretty amazing tool.
So this tool called eCitus, it's a private sector company. We pay a certain subscription amount per year, per month, whatever. I have access to it, a police officer has access to it, our library director has access to it, and then a few others, I believe, at City Hall have access to it. So what this tool does is that on a regular basis, it is putting information into their tool about grants that are out there. So this is across the board everything, public safety, construction, anything you can imagine. It's going out there searching government websites and just filling in grant opportunities. Now, these grants come from federal government, from non-for-profits. You think of it, it's in there. So the nice thing about this tool is that, yes, there's a ton of information in there, but it allows you to set up what we call search engines. You can tell the criteria you want it to report to you on, and it can send you an email once a day, once a week, that tells you, hey, this grant might fit your criteria for what you're looking to do. Now, that's just step one. Once you identify the grant, if that grant was something that was supplied for the last 5 years, every year there's an award of that same grant, you actually have access to the winning materials. So you can look at the grant that was submitted that won the actual grant, and you can go back and tailor your grant to match the winning, you know, the previous year's winning prize winner. So this tool has a lot of value in helping you get to those dollars. So I just wanted to show you guys this as a companion to what you're suggesting with SCORE. You know, you could identify a grant, download the information that was a winning grant proposal, and take that to SCORE with you, and, you know, using that as an aid, you know, grants can be written that, you know, hole in one, I guess.
Yeah, question for you. Have you got a vision?
I only have a couple
of things
of
we should have or would like to have in the future.
So
in terms of,
I didn't want to get too particular in this conversation.
Okay.
I think satellite phone, satellite internet are good things to think about for emergency operations. What I'm not as up to speed on are things, more tangible things, less technologically based, more things that, you know, what would the city need? Sandbags. I mean, what are some of the tangible things that would be useful in it, and that, you know, probably more useful than technology, I'm guessing. You know. So
one of the things I'll do is work with Shane and with Irv Corbin to come up with some search criteria, because there is a lot of Homeland Security money, and especially for public safety. I've done some of this in the past with Portland, where when I was with the CERT team, where we did a lot of, we received grants, but everything had to be tied to public safety. It couldn't be just, you know, like a law enforcement need. It had to be tied to public safety. So there's definitely grants out there. If we can start tracking and getting some of these and downloading prior award winners and then going to people like that to help us actually write a grant with that information, I think, you know, we might be successful. I mean, I think we're going to be a lot more potential to be successful if we have that information. So between working with Shane and Burb to set up this search criteria so that we start getting notified of grants that may fit, then we can narrow down and start really looking.
Fantastic.
Just a heads up, I attended a Homeland Security meeting here last week with the county, and they had applied for several grants, and in the past they were very successful in receiving those grants, but as of this year, a lot of the funds are starting to dry up.
Okay.
Really quickly. So they're finding that larger entities such as the counties or the states are not getting as many grants as, say, the cities like West Lynn or Sandy or the smaller areas. So that's a positive note for us.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I did a little looking around on the internet too after our last meeting, mm-hmm. To see if I could find any information on grants for emergency preparedness. And mostly on the internet, I saw grants that had already been awarded. There wasn't a whole lot about finding grants that were available. But I did find a company named the Harris Group, and I think they're either consultants or they're providers of satellite high-tech equipment for not only public institutions but also the military. And they have a representative here in this area who I talked to on the phone, and they have set up some systems, I think, for Lake Oswego, or he named some of the nearby towns, and that he's the area rep for this company. And they also have knowledge of how to fund these kinds of, you know, installations and technology. Help you get there, obviously, so they can do the work for you. So if that's helpful, you know, I do have that contact information also.
Yeah, you met Greg Swanson?
Yeah, myself, Greg, Ron Schwartz.
As long as he's in the loop, okay.
Ron Schwartz and one of my staff actually 2 years ago, I think, sat in on a presentation where he brought in some equipment. So the picture I'm passing around for you to take a look at, that's actually a physical photo of Clackamas County's satellite phone. Right. That's physically their phone.
Yeah, he did that for the Public Safety Committee. No, I think it was the Building Committee when we were designing this building.
2 years ago. He would have been here tonight, by the way, if he weren't out of town, because he's vitally interested in this.
Well, yeah, you wouldn't mind sending me that email contact, just and then I'll reach out, and I can, because when it comes to technology, Shane's the guy that's going to make the decisions, but we can certainly talk to him and see what he has to say.
So. That'll be good. So we can just evaluate the different approaches. Mm-hmm. If there's somebody who can kind of shortcut us to...
Yeah, if they've got grant information, absolutely.
Well, yeah, he would be the one to let us know what type of equipment would be best suited for this.
To even ask for.
Yeah. So we know we're asking for the right stuff.
So surprisingly, this model that Clackamas County has, they've had it for multiple years. I think it's the 9505A model. It's still current purchasing. You can go out to the Iridium's website and actually buy this model. You can buy a U.S.-only model, or you can buy a model that works internationally in addition to the U.S. And honestly, the cost of it is really not that much. $1,000 to $1,500 will probably get you this and the power station. Where we have to be careful is to make sure that we actually put a cell plan on it, or a service plan, because in the middle of a disaster, you just can't activate a service plan. You need to have the plan ahead of time. And I had budgeted for the service plan in my IT budget to make sure that we had quote unquote dial tone on that. So getting the physical device purchased, there's money to support the actual dial tone now.
If you got one of these, you would just be able to phone like the fire station or...
Anybody with a satellite phone. So what we would do is we would build out the call list on this for all the local partners who had satellite phones.
All federal agencies already have sat phones. And they're, Portland, all the big agencies have them. And we would, one of the primary things we do as soon as we got one is to build that list as big as we could. FEMA, everybody that we could, and then, of course, locally. But they work great. I mean, I've used them in the middle of nowhere, and they, as long as you can get satellite reception, which you almost always can, they work great.
So there are a few other things on their website that might be of notice. They have something called the Iridium Go. It's a satellite device that enables up to 5 smartphones that cannot get 3G, 4G service to actually get service.
Right.
So, something like that might be useful in an EOC operation where, you need people's smartphones to work to call outside.
What's the name again?
It's called the Iridium Go. If you go to Iridium's website, I can spell that for you if you'd like. IRIDIUM. And if you go to their website, they've got a few tools out there. Now there's another item, BGAN, BGAN. That's a satellite internet device, and what it does is provides a very very low speed internet connection. It would probably be good for updating a website, say your emergency operations website, say you needed to post phone numbers or other information on that to keep it current during a disaster. You might use that to do some very basic...
Is that comparable to what they have in the cruise ships that has very slow internet?
Yeah, the...
very slow. It's because you're paid by the minute.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's about as fast as dial-up.
Yeah, I mean, it is effectively fairly slow, so you're not going to have your whole...
It's better than a poke in the eye.
The good thing is our public website, our westlandoregon.gov, is actually hosted in a hardened data center. It's not on city property. It's hosted at Rackspace, and then, I believe, distributed at multiple points throughout the country. So in the event of a local disaster here, our website will continue to function. If we have a small-scale internet access device like this, we could go to it, update it, make changes to it if we needed to provide phone numbers or
and
other
these are all things that we could be looking at technology-wise for a grant.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And what are the costs on, you said $1,500 or so on the sat phone. What do these others range in terms of price?
So, I believe the BGAN was going to be somewhere around that $1,500 to $2,000.
And you said you'd budgeted for service for the cell or satellite phone. Mm-hmm. Or is there a budget for any of these other
I had budgeted for one cell phone and one BGAN.
Okay. I hate for us to seek out a grant and then not be able to
fund the service.
Operate it because we didn't have the funding for it.
Well, the nice thing about the service plans is you can buy the lowest cost service plan for quote unquote dial tone. The nice thing is that they don't limit you. So in the event of a disaster, you just crank it up and use as much as you want. You pay for it later.
Pay for the by the minute.
Well, just once you're on, you're on.
That's the thing is having that service is guarantees you that you're going to be able to connect and do what you need to do, and then use it as much as you need to. And if you go over your plan, which more than likely you will, it's kind of like that beg forgiveness. You know, you use as much as you need.
So. I do think that we should probably talk to TVF and RR about this, you know, the station and putting some facilities in there.
Yeah, they've got a lot going on, and our TVF and RR representative couldn't be here today, but we'll include him in this conversation, kind of aside from the meeting. And if we can get him to the next meeting, great. If we can't, we'll have some more information from him. But I think they're a little further along than we are here in this building. I'm pretty sure they've got a pretty good setup already in talking to...
Well, I believe in speaking with some of their command staff. They have a team of folks who focus just on EOC, planning, preparedness, documentation, material. So, you know, maybe your representative could
bring us some info. Yeah, and then we have an opportunity for a new building, so which hopefully is going to be seismically safe, and, you know, we can build it in.
And it could be the... It could end up being the second one down the road.
Probably a silly question, but do you still have ham radio networks around here, people that get on that? Because we use that, and they were able to communicate.
So yes, ham radios is something in the community you see. The only problem with ham radios is that it's sort of a click. If you don't operate on a ham radio and then all of a sudden fire one up and try to get on, people aren't going to know who you are. They're not going to be potentially as friendly. You find in these disaster situations, the ham radio may be great conceptually, but if you're not a personality on it working with these people, you may not.
Is that there are groups designed for disaster response. Clackamas County has such an entity that they coordinate, so I'm sure there are members of that program within our city limits.
Yeah,
so.
And you just rope them in.
We need to do the research because...
We have a station here in West Lynn that was used during World War II. It's still in existence. It came from Washington, D.C. to West Lynn and went out to all the ships in the Pacific. And that building is still there, and that antenna was still up 5 years ago.
Where is it at?
Bowder that used to be on... Not Bowder. He used to be on the city council. It's right across from across Highway 43 from Jolly Point. It's a kind of a Spanish-looking house, and the building is back there. And for that service, at the end of World War II, when they decommissioned the USS Oregon, they gave him a whole bunch of the stuff, and his whole basement is made up of all the stuff from that ship. But
well, make a note when you guys
got a giant generator up there too that could light up half the city.
Yeah, what you're talking about is a 40 and 80 meter band, which is not going to be as effective for local communications. Probably going to be on VHS.
When you guys are doing your meetings, as this gets the map your neighborhood and all that, as you start doing that, include one of the questions just to capture anybody that is a ham radio person. Include that as one of the questions so we can start building a list. Because I don't know anybody in the city, but I'm sure you're right. There are people that are
and I'm sure
doing it.
If you check Clackamas County, you can find out who's on their program and who is
county,
in our city.
The county has a list of the operators. Yeah.
Well, I think
and they love to be involved with some
sure.
of this.
Yeah.
You have to be licensed, I think, don't you operate ham radio?
Yes.
You have to be licensed, don't you operate ham radio?
Yes. Let's, through
maybe
FCC.
Maybe they're just waiting to be invited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I know that around in the ham radio operator circle that there are already in place at the state level and the county level. That infrastructure is already built, and part of that coordination is coordinating with the individual EOCs. So those people just
would be here aware that we exist.
The thing is that you're looking at they do it at that level. the level above us because people move around. So, you know, it's easier at a county and state level to maintain those, that interoperability than to try and track it at a, this granular level.
Well, yeah, but what if we have the big one and we need to get a message out?
That's what I mean. That network's in place.
We have to, but do we have to go through the county to find out where they live?
That's part of that. As we roll out our EOC, that's part.
The county's directly connected with us.
We're directly immediately. So that's part of that command structure. But I think it'd be great to look into figure out what we have.
So we got a couple things that I'll start working on the grant information. You keep working on the source you were talking about as far as when we come up with a grant that looks like this is something we should go after.
Yeah.
And then everybody else can, you know, same thing, that research. We'll talk to this guy. If you send me that email, Shane and I will talk to him. Let's move on to talk about the fair, because that's coming up, and some of the other things on the agenda. And if you'll just put that on Tony's desk at the end.
Absolutely.
And then I'll talk to you. I'm probably going to be back in tonight, okay. And I'll catch up with you about the rest of the meeting. All right, folks. Thanks for coming. See you later.
See you, Mike.
Have a good evening. You didn't have the agenda.
I didn't have it printed off for me. Yeah, there we go.
Here. How's that?
Perfect.
We're back up here. We did this first bullet first.
Okay. In terms of the fair, we're set up here. The big push for the fair from the police department standpoint is just outreach. We are doing more this year centered around emergency preparedness, as we talked about last time. So currently I'm just waiting for a bunch of different items to be shipped in that are part of the giveaways. We're going to have a spinning wheel for trivia for kids, and really kind of push an emphasis out on that. We are going to be giving out buckets and starting the What's in Your Bucket kind of a social media campaign. So my goal is to, my goal would be to hit about 100 buckets to give out.
Where are you getting your buckets?
Well, I'm actually going to be working through Walmart. Looks like they sell five gallon buckets, and trying to get they have a very easy grant writing process. I got $1,500 from them last year for the School Resource Officer Association, and so it's at this local level. But because I'm still listed as part of the School Resource Officer Association, they wrote another grant. I have to get myself removed from the School Resource Officers Association. They won't let me write another grant through Walmart. So, but it's a great asset. I play a telephone tag with the manager over here, and I think that we're going to easily get another 20 to 40 buckets.
Right.
I'm a scrapper when it comes to trying to buy stuff for free. So,
yeah, me too.
So
how is this different from what the Rotary is doing? In terms of filling buckets?
Well, the Rotary is only going to contribute money toward it. Yeah. We're doing the buckets. And Rotary is just one of the groups that's helping. Ace Hardware, Rotary is doing some matching funds, Home Depot, all the buckets and lids.
So is this the same effort?
No.
Well, it's coordinated, but it's...
Yeah, it's similar, but it's not the same.
The buckets...
Yeah.
So we have two different bucket efforts. One to give out at the fair, the other to give to Map Your Neighborhood leaders and
Yes.
But they're centered around the same thing. Their buckets are going to be the buckets that the Map Your Neighborhood folks are getting are filled. Minor starter kits. So they're really centered around, you know, here's a bucket, here's an idea of what you put in. Go out, fill it up, take a picture of it.
Thank you.
Tell us what you put in your basket.
See you, Shane. See you guys.
And communicate, trying to open that level of communication on the social media scale.
Okay, so you've got print material going in there.
Yep.
You're going to be using the shaky ground. as part of that?
Yep.
And have you got labels for them yet?
Well, and actually, the in the bucket itself, it's just going to be a flyer and a bucket,
yeah.
And that's it. Now, the printed all of our other material is going to be there available at the booth.
Yeah, but we talked about having,
yeah.
We talked about having
yes.
email so people can contact us.
Yeah,
exactly.
The information you're talking about, the Shaky Ground printouts, they don't. I asked that question the other day. That won't be coming out until about a month prior to the. You're talking about the shakeout, right?
No. Shaking.
Arching ground.
Shaking ground.
Shaking ground. Have you seen that? You know what it is, Randy?
Yes, yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, that's a very effective tool.
Yes.
Because it, you know, you're talking anywhere from some of the kids falling down, cutting themselves to the whole Marianne.
Okay, I thought you were talking about the.
No.
The drill.
So this. Will be in a bucket that's otherwise empty that you hang it.
No, we're not putting the all shaky grounds are going to be there available to us. But the bucket is literally just the bucket is just literally that. It's a bucket with information on it about this campaign and everything else. In the past, when I've done this stuff, what I found is if you just give a bunch of stuff to people, you don't have to work for it. But I want to pique their interest, want to get them going on this idea of. Having to build it, and then they take ownership of it, right? So and there's a contest element to it, so which would be September is preparedness month. So probably in that second week or first week of, end of the first week, beginning of second week of September, we'll have, I think it'd be great to bring back the photos to the PSAB. We decide who the winner is, and the goal, hopefully if Red Cross comes through for me, is we'll be able to give away their $50 personal performance kit that they sell. So that'll be a bonus.
Are you going to prepare a bucket to as a demo bucket so as they can see what it could look like?
Exactly. We'll have photographs of it. Because I think, kicking around the idea, but I think if I build one of those buckets, I think I'm going to give it away online today. So I'll find some. Very interested young person or whoever who's excited about it, who will blab about it and everything else, and we'll give it to them. So.
Age discriminating, that's what you're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. I already know from that guy. I'm talking about somebody younger than me.
Close to 100.
You're going to get 20, 30.
Well, I got my little hands in the basket there. I've got a line on. Hopefully up to maybe 5,000 for a bucket.
That's
5 gallon buckets.
Are you going to Home Depot? That would not be a bad idea.
Well, they got theirs from Home Depot. I'm getting a small amount from Walmart, but the food service suppliers who do local organics and stuff like that, they wind up for their regulations. They can only use a bucket once. So those buckets come back to them, and they're wind up with a surplus, so they clean them. So they're in fantastic shape.
Go over to Lowe's here. Who people do this?
Exactly.
You gotta do
this. Well, I'm going to hit Lowe's as soon as we decide what's on our list here. So I got a bunch of places to hit. I need to know what we're going to put in the buckets.
What about Target? Will they do anything? Target?
We'll see. They're usually hard to work with. Several layers of...
Okay, so
misdirections.
You know what we're going to actually put in the bucket? I've seen several different lists.
We're going to be the exact same. My thing is going to be the exact same as the information going out is all
the same.
The same. It's just a matter of it's coming from different sources and different sides. That way, if we're all coordinating our message the same. It's people are hearing it from different angles.
And I don't have the agenda in front of me, but I think that was one of the main things we were here for tonight, was to make that final decision on what we were going to include in the buckets.
Right down here. Please have your list of the top 5 items you believe need to be in each bucket.
You got yours? Look at that.
So, my top 5 are... Utility shut-off tool.
That
And not necessarily, you know, big expensive wrench, but I've seen the one for turning the gas meter that's long and narrow and it just has a slot.
Yep.
Hard hat, the headlamp to put on the hard hat, a whistle, and a crank or battery operated radio. Those are my top five.
I would include a water filter.
A what?
One of the things I had online is dust masks.
Yes.
And the wrenches that you were talking about, I have one I didn't bring. I thought I had it at the last meeting, but they're from the gas company. My gas company connection is checking to see if we can get them directly from the maker or get them donated through the gas company. But as it stands, we can get them for $2.75 if we don't get any other deals on them. And they're perfect.
Yeah.
And you're going with 5,000 buckets? What you're saying?
I'm trying to. I've got a line on that many. It's just a matter of whether I can make it happen.
Realistically, what are we looking at then?
Oh, for the interim right here?
Honestly,
you look at Orange County, which is a county of around 4 million people, 3 million people, and in a single year, success for them is to hit 1%. So that's 3,000, 300, whatever it is. That's all. So, if we could hit 1% of population a year here, that's 270 buckets to give away a year. Yeah. So we don't need to have a ton this first year on hand. I think if we can hit, if I can give away, if I can get people to be honest, you know, earnest enough to sign a commitment to prepare, either attend a map your neighborhood meeting or to do something else in terms of preparedness, and give them a bucket for that. And if I can get 40, 50 people, I'd be
I think I got a list of stuff that would be really good on my desk.
So for me, the things I would add to that would be foil water packets. I keep those on hand. They're personal water. They're like a Capri Sun packet, but they're water.
Okay.
And they're 5 to 7 year shelf life. Fantastic. And then also, things like glow sticks. So items that you can, that are small, lightweight, that you can pack into it. Cordage.
Small first aid kit.
Small first aid kit.
So you're talking about the top five then?
Oh, I'm just throwing out there what we can do in there. On top of the those would be.
What about others that are the top five?
Okay. I had gloves down as one. And they have these lightweight, they're called solar blankets. They fold them up in a little package, but you can get them out, wrap them around, and they really help retain body heat, particularly for people who are in shock.
Or Mylar.
Mylar, yeah, same thank you.
Yeah.
Like the
funky balloons.
Yeah, right.
Any other... for? Anything
I had
to add to the top five?
A bottle of bleach.
Which is kind of like the water filter idea. Or the
if you know what the formula is, you can actually...
Just a couple drops a gallon.
I had a tablet super
doesn't taste good. The American Red Cross has a brochure that they put out for free. It's just a ton of material ideas. How to do first aid, how to do this, how to do that. So I thought it was an instructional kind of thing, we could do that.
Yeah. At our last workshop that Grant and I did here, and with Sergeant Francis, I printed off handouts that had what to do with the water. And it was
right.
2 pages, and it was, you know, how to make your water potable. So,
I have more practical things, at least from my perspective anyway, that I would like to have in my bucket. And the first thing I'd like to have is a Leatherman's tool. or the equivalent. And the next thing I want is I want to scan a closed light rope. Because when you're dealing with being...
I didn't hear what you said.
Clothesline. It's cotton. It's easy to work with.
I just didn't hear what you said.
To me, just the handiest thing in the world. And then candles. Because with a candle, you can start a fire. If you can get your candle lit, you can start a fire because you can pile stuff up around.
That's probably
and a lot of us aren't very good at starting fires.
But with a candle, you can start a fire, and fires are a big issue when these places go down, not just the gas, but stuff from the
water. So the other thing we used to do when I was a scout, so I also had a box of wood matches that you dipped in paraffin. These were just, I mean, when you're really in trouble, the kinds of things you need.
Pry bomb.
Maybe a couple of three things that I just think about all the time. If I'm going someplace and I'm going to be stuck, I want.
Perfect. Oh. Extra batteries for your flashlight.
Right. Lighter?
No, pills. Yes.
Pills. Pill box.
Some kind of indestructible pill box.
So,
if you may not need them, she may not need
them. Yeah, that's good.
You know, but that brings up a good idea that, you know, what, go to Costco and get a bottle of ibuprofen. I can swear that in any disaster, you're going to be hurting like hell somewhere.
No, that's a good idea, too, because I interpreted this top five items as kind of a way to come up with the list for the buckets that we're handing out. But, and so we don't really need to drill down into everything that needs to be in.
No, but you almost have to hit on food for thought, the things you wouldn't think about.
So,
like pet supplies.
So, well, and I was thinking that, you know, the pills are kind of individualized things, so why would we put it in a generic what's in your bucket? But, you know, putting an empty pill box, like a brand new plastic pill container with nothing in it, or a bottle of ibuprofen, either one, spurs somebody's, you know,
absolutely. That, and those
idea
those are,
that okay, now you put your own pills in here,
and those are free with most pharmacies. Those little pill boxes. That's a good idea.
Are they?
Yeah,
because I had to pay money.
My pharmacy is all free. They got a little.
We'll all go there.
Hagen is all free.
But yeah,
we just
so
have to figure out what things we're going to include. And the other stuff should be on a list that we print out. Here are other suggested items for you to include in your bucket.
So I hope the next thing
we can't afford to do all of it.
After this conversation is we can talk about the postcard or the invitation card.
Yeah.
Because I've got people asking me for it, and
yes,
I really would like to move forward, get it printed. Because I think people are kind of waiting to schedule. Some people are waiting to schedule their meeting. You know, they want to use that as the icebreaker and the way to talk to people.
You know, since you brought that up, I know this is something that's not going to be in the bucket, but it's in some way we need to relay to the public that, and most of us here probably already have done it in our houses. Medications are very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And when the emergency happens, more than likely if it's a 9.0, We're going to be out of contact with our physicians for months.
Yeah.
They're going to be so busy. They're going to be relocated. Mm-hmm. What they suggest is that you have at least a minimum month's worth of an additional medication. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure all of us know that. But there's a lot of people out there that don't even give that a second thought, because a lot of it is medication they need to stay alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're not added to the victim list.
You know, and it's really hard for a lot of people to do that, because if you've got medical insurance, pharmaceutical insurance, they've got you down to your last few pills before you can order again. I mean, it's very difficult to build that up. But you can, through your physician, get an extra 90-day supply and put it aside.
Just pay for it out of pocket.
Yeah.
Right. I talked to my physician about this, and he said, hey, we're all about making sure you have your medication.
Yeah.
It's all through the insurance
companies.
But the insurance companies will provide 90 days on most medications.
Mm-hmm. And gloves.
Yes.
Work gloves.
Yes.
Work gloves and, okay, gloves, plastic and work gloves. They don't sell latex gloves anymore, I found out.
Oh, yes.
They
do.
Go Okay. Harbor Freight, you can buy them by the bucket.
Okay. Yeah, but the heavy gloves you'll need for.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
That stuff.
Yeah.
Is that that inventory?
Yeah, you've seen that, right?
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
And these are just little things we can toss in there that we got all over this. Have you seen this?
No.
Well, that's like the first aid thing that I mentioned. It's more like a piece of newspaper, but it's got just tons of resource ideas in it.
Yeah. There's a thing that I got at the FedEx shop down here on Highway 43, and it's laminated. It's about four pages front and back of first aid instructions. What to do for this, for this, for this. And for the people who haven't had formal first aid training, it was really fun. And I think that would be very important to put in the starter buckets for a lot of people.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah.
Oh, the can opener. I love them. Yeah, the can opener.
Leatherman's tool. Comes on.
Yeah. Can you still get those Scout can openers and flip them like that?
Think about the old World War II.
P-38s? Yeah, whatever they were, yeah. But...
And the towelettes.
They're all
good
over.
Idea. Pack
we
of those.
We get the B-38s at
Any
it was a sports show. They were selling them for 30
bucks. You know, in the earthquake, when I worked in the ER after the earthquake, the injuries that we saw primarily were cut heads and head injuries from stuff falling and cut feet from glass on the ground.
So... what were we supposed to do with our top five then?
I think we were just going to compile them, and mm-hmm. then these guys were going to figure out what is the most common five.
We'll take the list and we'll try and figure out not only what are the most important, but what can we afford in the starter bucket. Mm-hmm. And what we can't afford goes on the list then, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he may buy a leather one, and I may buy a cheap imitation
of one. You can always get a church key. They'll do almost everything.
That's true, but they don't sell these anymore.
Not happening. Hey,
was that July 26th? I was trying to find it on my, I can't remember.
Yeah, no, because I'm doing the slip water rescue.
But I mean, that's something we could, I mean, we could even attend the 26th.
You want to look at this and pass it around the other way.
That's good.
That's the postcard, and I only made two copies, front and back, tonight.
Yeah, I've got your copies at home.
I think it's great.
Yeah. Good job on that.
Yeah, this is really nice. I had the letter up that I used for that workshop, but a lot of people looked at it like, I'm not sure I'm going to send something like that out. But this is nice. I like it.
And then on the back, there's the second page there. Just on the back is, and I'll go back and make sure that everything we mentioned tonight is on that list, too. And I'd like to move forward with getting some of those printed.
Please do. Okay. We don't have a budget, a printing budget. Do we just take it to the city then and... get those printed, or they can they print them here at the station? Or
I know that the city is printing one postcard a year for every. I don't mean just one card. I mean one solid postcard a year for the NAs. I don't see why they wouldn't do a postcard for you guys.
Well, when we brought this up with Mike, meeting before last, I think it was. He said that the city could do it.
I mean,
he didn't get it. It wasn't qualified. It was yes.
Yeah, I think it would do you this.
Yeah. For the advice, not as an NA, but as a citizen's advice.
Do you want to carry this through, don't you?
I think, sure. I could maybe contact Lori Hall.
Yeah.
Unless...
she can steer you in the right direction anyhow.
Say I said so.
Are we back to Matt from neighborhood now?
Are you finished?
Kind of going from the top to the bottom.
Well, we're starting with.
We're almost done.
Who's running the meeting here?
That'd be Mike.
It's Phil.
Did I inherit this? All right. All right, let's see here. So we got Matt, your neighbor update.
Okay.
I think that went really well.
Okay.
Go ahead.
We had the meeting. You all know that. 27, 28 people there, whatever it was.
Yeah.
Basic method of contacting those people was that?
Next door.
Next door.
Yeah.
That.
Amazing.
From that evening, I put in place three groups of people that were already going to do their neighborhood with material.
Fantastic.
Out there.
And I had one.
You got another one on?
Yeah.
Up in Barrington Heights, Hidden Springs neighborhood, or Hidden Creek, she jumped on that right away. She said, we're doing it.
Yeah.
Give me the material, take it home and do it. Dee Dee Montgomery took to her neighborhood. That's Mayor Axelrod's wife. Clarity Sanderson, I don't know who she is. She's over on Windsor Terrace.
Yeah, we've gotten a lot of emails from her.
Yeah, but she's got everything.
Yeah. Until we wanted to get the stuff to her, and she said, "Well, I'm not quite ready."
Well, say, but these are people that have taken an active position on. A gal in over where she live on Valley View. 2 years ago, I contacted her just to show you how this works. Met her in her house with some other people in the neighborhood. Dropped off a packet. We talked about it. They were excited. And that was the last I heard. Until about 4 weeks ago. And she contacted me. She says, I want the booklets. We're going to have a meeting in the neighborhood. I said, what do you need? She said, just give me the stuff and let me do it and I'll take care of it. So she did. And I got a letter back. Or actually got back the evaluation sheet that goes in my packet that nobody ever sends back.
Yeah.
And mailed it back to the address that was on the thing. And what she said, added name tags for the presentation, so everybody had a name tag when they showed up. Nine of the 13 houses attended the meeting and formed a caring community in the process. An excellent format. She loved it.
That's awesome.
And that was just, and she just grabbed the ball basically and ran with it.
And 9 of 13, that's about the average.
Yeah. That's,
unless you've got a neighborhood that gets together a lot on their own.
So what I would like to see, just to bulge myself that just a little bit, what's the chance of us as members of the Public Safety Advisory Board having a badge that tells people that so that we can go to a function like the fair down there? If we're going to be at the fair, I'd be glad to spend some time assisting you in the booth.
Yeah.
Have you like
well,
being available.
We used to have them for the Police Advisory Board, and I think it's just a matter of...
Like something like that?
No.
No, something
it was
that you
a
can
badge.
See. No, I don't mean a business. I mean a
button. Like a button.
Like a, you know, like when you go to a convention or something like that, you get a name badge.
Let me look into that.
Because we got them when I, about the second year I was chair from, Terry got them.
Yeah, I printed up my own, but it's sort of a dorky looking thing, so if you guys could come up with something really class.
Well, there's a couple ideas that you could do like that. Can't think of what they're called.
Well, so when we... Whoever else shows up at a meeting with these people or something like it, I've been in sales all my years.
That's a good idea,
it
Grant.
Makes you look like you're supposed to know what you're talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, and the more professionally done it is, the better.
Right. Yeah, they can approach you with different ideas and things like that. Yeah. They'll know that you're the person you probably need to talk to in the event of...
Yeah, I've been I used to wear one when I was in sales all the time. Companies would make me one, so I had one made. So when I talked to my clients... They had a name to talk back to me because I already knew who they were.
And that's good.
It's a PR thing.
I was thinking badge, and I'm like going like a blonde. I had the wrong badge in my head.
Yeah,
so,
okay, well,
so yeah, I you know what, Grant, I will work on that. Yeah, that's easy. That's easy to do.
Yeah. Small thing, but it just carries.
At the next meeting, I'll bring you guys
something like this, right?
Something, similar to that.
Yeah.
Just something you can pin on your shirt or pin on your lapel or whatever.
Exactly.
With the city logo.
Yeah, but it carries some authority with it.
Yeah. Nope, I'll work on
that. Because I hate it when I get in my jeans and t-shirt and they look at me and you say,
well, it would really help me cut through a lot of the red tape when I go to these places and ask for
Right.
I had a little trouble at Home Depot at first until I convinced them, showed them all the materials and everything.
And especially with all the blogs going on out there, you do have some type of identification.
Otherwise, it just looks like Joe off the street looking for
freebies. I think I'll explore. I think probably the easiest way to do it is honestly just to have a PSA a one of these made up, right? With a clip on here.
I want big print.
That's your, yeah, a large.
I can't see that
large
stuff.
Large print would help.
mine just has the magnetic swipe to get into all the facilities, but you know that would be. It would carry some officialness to it.
Yeah.
And
instead of putting police at the bottom here, we can put down the
PSAB.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. I just want to reinforce your idea of having just the stick-on convention type stickers at the actual Map Your Neighborhood meeting. I think that's a good idea
for all these people
meeting,
come in
too, who may not know each other.
Yeah.
You know that. That's a good idea, too.
Before we adjourn, I have one thing that a number of people have talked to me about, and it can't be put off till next meeting. Fireworks. We are really in a drought here, whether we admit it or not.
Well, the state just declared it today.
Our greenways are dry, dry, dry. A lot of the little creeks that run through Westland don't even have any water in them now. These are dead water year round. We have a number of people every year have fireworks displays, some of them substantial and a bit out of control.
Mm-hmm.
I would really like to see a statement come from this board and the police that we recommend no fireworks this year because of the fire hazards.
Mm-hmm.
I really hate to lose a bunch of homes and a few lives because somebody's rocket went off the wrong direction.
Oh, maybe a crackdown, not just guys, you're not supposed to be doing this, more of a crackdown on and letting those going to be for the illegal fireworks. So those are the most dangerous.
Yeah, for example, right down at the end of my street, the CEO of Precision Cast Parts has a locked gate with a guard at it, and he invites his friends down, and they have one hell of a bang-up, shooting them out toward the river, and they go all over the place. And he does not get a permit, or did not when I checked, of course.
I know there's plenty around in the streets and the park and everything else. It's just it's not a good year.
Maybe we should approach the newspaper.
Yeah.
Well, have them put something in there.
Yeah, I mean, from the police department side, I'll put up, you know, information, and I'll find out from myself what they've got going on. I think they are on that end of it.
To be honest with you, as police officers, 4th of July, those calls come in every 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And to be able to respond to each and every one of those is absolutely impossible. So you have to pick and choose between the party that's out of control, drunks, and the fireworks. And a lot of fireworks are going to be set aside, unfortunately.
Yeah. You know, we've tried to coordinate with TVFNR in the past to have a fire marshal come out and ride with the cops. I know Stratton tried to do that last year, I think. And TVFNR's service area is large. They have a finite number of marshals and finite number of agencies, a larger number of agencies, excuse me, to host. So tried to do that with them, but you know we are going to take a attack.
Yeah, you know,
this year but
this year is far more dangerous than any year I can ever remember.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you don't have to look out much further than across the roadway.
Do you have extra patrols on holiday nights like that, where you're likely to have a lot more calls of drunken parties and fires?
Oh, 4th of July is a pretty big headache for law enforcement.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
You put aside the fireworks. I mean, there's a lot of beer drinking, there's a lot of partying going on, and the fireworks is just attributed, or it is part of the partying. And so when these guys are going to bar fights, or when they're going to a domestic disturbance, hundreds of thousands or hundreds of people are out there lighting off the fireworks. And I personally, after 35 years of law enforcement, I think the most important thing is to get the message out to citizens, that hey,
Water. Make sure that you water down your lawn. Put, if you got shake roofs, put some water on it. Because the yahoos that light these fireworks off, they're not going to read the paper. They're not going to listen to the police.
See our greenways. They go throughout all our neighborhoods, and there's nothing we can do to water them down.
Yeah. I got a big field behind me, and this guy lights off fireworks. Sure. I went over and talked to him. He says, "Hey, call the police." He knows Oregon City's not going to be able to respond.
Our messaging will be going out, but it has to be coordinated with the UNR because they're the primary response for anything like that. And we've had instances, not with TVFNR, but with people posting on behalf of the police department for other agencies, and the information was either inaccurate or inappropriate to go out, and that information needs to come from the PIOs, and it has to be coordinated, because otherwise it puts these other organizations and other agencies in a pickle, basically. So, that's something that Pisith and I will be communicating about. But in terms of enforcement, there's three of us working on
that. This might be something the city council can take on. Not this year, it's way too late. But in the future, I think it's either Clark County or the city of Vancouver. They allow one day for fireworks, and this is the 4th of July. You can buy like 3 days before and nothing afterwards. But I think it's the city, I'm not sure, but they limit one day fireworks and that's it. Because you know how the 4th of July, it's going to start here in another, as soon as those stands open, that's when everything starts.
Yep,
and it goes on.
And then it goes on until the end of July. So maybe the city, city councilor can adopt some type of ordinance that would at least help us go out there and say, okay, now, before the big party, we can crack down on these guys, let's confiscate this stuff.
And again, I think from an enforcement standpoint, those kind of conversations would need to take place in conjunction with the UNR. Because the marshals are the fire marshals are the big, and the big impact there.
Yeah. I mean, I work the ER, so I know what it's like on just like that. Sure. I'm in a football game, You've got them all eating and drinking and everything's quiet and dead in the ER, and as soon as the game's over, in the calm, drunk, yeah. Heart attacks, fights.
Exactly.
So SCORE was the Homeland Security grant, was that correct? Okay. We've gotten. Is there any other things that we should be bringing up here? I think we've covered.
There were two of these. I have one right here. There's the other one. Why don't you keep that one then?
Well, there are two items on here from you regarding the fair and the Nextdoor social media.
So Nextdoor social media. Lori Hall is the person that should talk about that because I still don't even know how to use the dang thing. I try to figure it out. It doesn't make sense to me. It works, obviously. It worked really well. I don't have a problem with that. It's not my area of expertise, and she was going to come in and do it, but she's off. And so because I do social media for the police department, I got lumped into that, and I'll be honest with you. I don't know what the hell.
Want me to come down and give you lessons?
Why don't?
Yeah, you guys probably. It would be helpful. At this point.
Why don't we put Lori on the agenda for September?
Yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah, because
What's her last name? Mike?
Hall.
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 H-A-L.
It's not hard.
Well, I tried to establish a. I got invited to be an administrator on this account, and I can't log in. I mean, I log in, but it doesn't allow me to do anything. I can't make posts. I tried to do it on the phone. I followed their instructions to get on the phone. The phone doesn't even allow me to log in to the thing. And I'm like, and to be very honest, I've got a shift full of very young guys and a lot of stuff on my plate.
Ask them how to do it.
One more additional.
Yeah.
They probably know more about it than you do.
Lori does a great job, and she has it, so I take the approach of I need this on there.
I was honestly surprised when I posted that on there.
Oh.
The result that we got, because
it worked.
I know it's broken down by zip code.
Well, it's called Hidden Springs
neighborhood.
Unfortunately, there's two entities that are hooked up to that. One of them is Jennings Lodge, and one of them is in Oregon City.
Yeah.
But you don't have to include them on your list. You can break them off. So there's a way to do that.
We don't have to talk to Denny about you, sir.
Yeah, I'll talk to Denny.
Break him off. We don't have to talk to him.
Yeah, right.
Okay. What am I doing? I need to write it down.
You're the brunt of a joke. So
what are we looking at for our next PSA?
I didn't hear it.
What, September? Is that when we got a meeting through the
July,
summer?
July, August, we're done.
What's the date of the safety period?
There.
What's the date of the safety period?
18th.
July?
No, that's old-fashioned fair.
That's the old-fashioned fair. Oh.
Yeah, it's a September date, right?
September 28th, fourth Monday.
That's the safety fair, right?
No, September 28th, the fourth Monday for our meeting, I guess.
Okay, if that works for you guys, let's go ahead and just set that. September 28th.
28th.
September 28th?
28th, yeah.
So no meeting in July or August?
July with the fair and everything else that's going on, and September is prepared this month.
We never had a fair. When we tried to conduct those, we never had enough people to have a meeting. So
okay, I already have it down.
People gone. So
no meeting in August
for the 28th.
September 28th, Monday, which is the fourth Friday, or the fourth Monday, which is what we used to be doing.
Yeah, that's already got it scheduled as being our meeting. So
okay,
all right.
We changed the date here a month or so ago because of
to accommodate somebody like you.
Ooh.
Got everything screwed up.
So. Well, you know, I do have to go to these council meetings on Monday. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I thought that was a good move because all the various people that we've had assigned to this body would come down for at best a half an hour and then have to run up to the meeting. So we appreciate your attendance.
Especially as I drove from San Francisco this morning.
Yeah, you beat the hell out of me. Yeah. I just
that's a good place to be coming from,
wasn't it?
Well, yeah, I left at 5:30 this morning.
Oh, then you made good time.
Yeah,
well, you made really good time. We come straight here.
No, I go home just about 4. No, I've unpacked, put a load of washing in, and then I came here.
You are efficient,
Brenda. I just have one thing to say, and that is, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
That is pretty impressive. I've made that drive many times myself, and I'm so impressed that you had the fortitude and the dedication to come to this meeting tonight. Oh, so thank you.
I've had to miss a couple because of meetings, council meetings, so I hate to do that. So if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. But anyway, you guys are doing an amazing job. You really are, and it's so important. I mean, like, for me as an ex-EO nurse, I really value what you're doing.
Well, I've noticed that there are like two levels of emergency preparedness here. And one is business continuity on the part of the city. But the other is the citizens and what are they going to do. And they really, sometimes it seems like when you're talking to a city leader or a manager in the city, they're thinking about the corporate side of it. And they're not really thinking about, you know, the neighborhood side of it. And so I do think that it's been educational for me, and I understand now why sometimes I'll have a conversation and we seem to be talking about different things.
Right. Well, the citizens are going to be on their own for a long time.
Right.
And that's why he's got this map your neighborhood, which is a fantastic program. Because in the event that what does happen, we're going to have to rely on one another next to us. Unless unless they medevac us out of someplace because we're severely injured or something like that, we're going to have to rely upon us and our neighbors to get by with water and food and shelter. Law enforcement, TVFNR, they're going to be trying putting a lot of the infrastructure back together to try and get avenues of highways and stuff back together so we can get our people and things back together.
But they're not going to be coming when we go.
One of the things
life safety and order is going to be our side of it. It's going to be
nothing works like visual. We had a film, and I'm sure it's on an updated one since. If you could potentially get hold of it, of what it looks like after an earthquake, sort of going around just the different issues that people have dealt with, that they do these informational films. Can we get hold of one of those? Because let me tell you, it was stunning. Just to say, you know, people would say, oh, I'm going to run out in the street, you know, get out of the house. No, you see the street, what it looks like after it, with the chimneys down and the tiles and everything else. You don't want to be under that particular shower. So it's really understanding and getting a visual, you know, wow, this could happen, and this is what it looks like. And it wakes people up to think about getting ready.
You know,
I think the county's
what
got
I would
that,
really like mm-hmm. is to have... Here's my dream. I'd like to have somebody come to my house and look at, you know, what I have and tell me where to put my emergency kit. What might be accessible, what might not.
Do you have a shed?
I have a garden shed.
Good, go right there. Yes. If your house collapses, it's
your garden shed. Yeah. Visual. The visual is hard, and you don't know how your structure is going to handle
sure.
it.
And the other thing I would do is tie a piece of string to it and tie the string somewhere outside, because then if anything does fall out, you can follow the string.
A lot of this you can find online, but like they both said, outside of your main structure is probably going to be the best place mm-hmm. to put something like that. Because even if your shed falls over, how much weight is that? You know, there's not a lot of debris you're going to have to get rid of.
Well, there might be a tree on it.
But. One of the things that we did, I've got a kit that's more like a footlocker than a bucket. So, but when I put it in, my neighbor came over and asked me, what was I doing? And I said, well, this is in case of emergency. It's got food. It's got tons of stuff, including a tent. She said, oh, that's a great idea. I should do that. I told her, well, you should. You should put in that shed right beside mine. So, and the other thing I told her is that if perhaps this happens and I'm not here and Gail's not here, you're welcome to get in the shed and get whatever you need. She said, well, you've got it locked. I said, if your husband can't figure out how to bring this lock on, he should have married somebody else. But the fact is that, you know, I frequently am in various parts of the county. I may be in Lake Oswego and can't get here.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
absolutely.
The police can't get here. Mm-hmm. I can't get home. So, and my cell phone doesn't work, so why would I have a kit that nobody could use?
That reminds me of one thing I was going to bring up tonight. I know it's a little late, and we're in the process of adjourning, but... One thing that came up at the Robinwood Emergency Preparedness meeting was having somebody prepared to ferry people back and forth across the Willamette. And if, you know, the emergency, the bridges are unpassable, or else they just need to be inspected and they close them down until they can make sure they're safe.
That might not be possible for... weeks at least, yeah. Because the dams upstream,
the debris and everything,
yeah. Dams will fail.
So you couldn't get a boat across.
Yeah,
it would be very dangerous.
It's probably your best hedge in that bet is to shelter in place,
stay put,
because then people will know to come to look for you. The problem with the streams is
about parents and kids and families being separated.
Yeah, I face that situation every day.
Yep.
And that my kids, we've had very real conversations. They know where they have to try and get to, and because they know that mom and dad aren't going to be able to get to them. It's just not going to happen.
And that's another thing, map your neighborhood. If there's kids there, mm-hmm. You know the neighbors who are going to look out for them and make sure they're okay. And the animals. If you are away, you've got animals in the house.
So, OPB, I don't know if you guys were aware of this, but Public Broadcasting did a thing where they had like four families have a pretend disaster and they were supposed to mm-hmm. act accordingly, and there was a scenario for them, and they were supposed to live out of their emergency kits over a weekend. And
one of the dads who participated in this said that his 10-year-old kids, even though they'd been through the whole drill and, you know, told the kids what they were supposed to do and where they were supposed to meet, even in the face of all this, kids decided they were going to go downtown and meet Dad, find Dad in downtown Portland at his work.
That's their security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I agree, but I also worry.
Yeah, one of my hopes is to bring the school district into the conversation mm-hmm. in the fall. They're really trying to avoid this conversation.
Yeah.
For the sake of safety, it's a stranger danger. We've created an environment where kids don't bother and they don't trust anybody. They don't.
Good reason,
yeah.
I think.
And with our school, there's only two kids, and so we've actually hired them to do things so they know who we are.
Having worked in this school district, it's ridiculous. They don't want to have anything to do with when it comes to true public school safety. None. They would like to live in their world of making sure that we have kids who will graduate from high school, go into a four-year university, and get top-notch jobs. And I think that's very well to do and everything else, but you can't bring up a discussion with them about emergency preparedness, about preparing for, you know, God forbid, a school-type shooting.
Yeah, it's not going to happen to them.
You can't, because it just won't happen to them. Mm-hmm. And you can't talk to them about maybe taking the population of kids that they have in their school that aren't going to go to college, have no desire to go to college, but would like to learn a life skill. Mm-hmm. But they don't see those kids as being their main audience. And, you know, so until the school district and the people who are in power wake up a little bit in that regards, It is a closed door. It is a very tough door to crack, and I spent 3.5 years trying to crack it just on two issues alone. And
you know, perhaps we ought to try and get on the school board's agenda, two or three of us, and go and put a presentation forward. I talked to a Lake Oswego principal. I said, "What would you do in case of a major earthquake?" He said, "Well, we'd get all the kids on buses and get them home."
Yeah. Oh, good luck on that.
Yeah, exactly.
I said, "Where?"
That is really.
That's the extent of the thought process.
Where do you keep your head during the daylight? You know.
I mean, we had a fire at the school. Where we had to evacuate 1,500 students. Something that gets practiced by law four times a year. Okay, and everything fell back to me as being just the cop in the school as to, we need you to develop in this emergency that's happening right now, we need for you to develop how we're going to reunify students and how we're going to handle getting students out of here when there's fire trucks in the way because we can't get anybody out on a car. I'm like, I will put this together for you guys, but this is the type of thing I've been talking about. You need to prepare for these things because guess what? Now you know what it looks like.
That, you know, you hit it right in the head. Not just schools, but everybody. Emergency preparedness, people don't want to think it's going to happen.
Yeah, sure.
So they're not going to prepare themselves. They're not going to waste the money on the water system that's going to provide them clean water. They're not going to waste storage space and money for food that they're going to need the event. They don't worry about that till it happens. Then they want, oh, my God. Why didn't you guys come save me, or why didn't you save me?
Or but they'll be at their neighbors trying to take what their neighbors
exactly.
got.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is where we can change, though. We can begin to turn that head. And I think the Map Your Neighborhood program was an incredible
yep.
first start. I mean, it was a joy to sit in here and watch people actively participate in that at all levels. So
have you tried to approach the schools through the PTA? Because you get the parents concerned about what's going to happen to their kids in emergency. They can put pressure on the schools.
They can try. The PTAs at all the schools here are very, honestly, the school district does not view them as being anything more than really what can we do to pander to them.
Cheerleaders.
And that's about it.
The other problem you have is that when we grew up, there was always a parent at home. Now it's mm-hmm. two family workers,
mm-hmm.
and I know when my daughter was going to school, we were not nearly as active with the schools as I remember my mom being.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've got that different mindset, and so you don't have that support from the parents. So
and see, that's another thing we could develop and put in the bucket. Mm-hmm. Parents have got to provide the security for their children. They have to let them know, like, how am I getting home from school in this event, or what do I do? Dad's going to be here. I'm going to be possibly here. We as parents and grandparents, we have got to educate our families, okay, this is what you need to do, because we're going to be by ourselves. We really are. It's going to be chaotic. I mean, even if you get to the ELC, the ELC is going to be chaotic for 48 to 72 hours. So, and they're the trained people.
And for those kids, the safest place to be is stay at school.
Stay in place. Absolutely. Find a shelter.
The schools have no water, no facilities for anything.
But see, but that's that portion of it. That's where the EOC comes into a place. When we have a large scale situation like kids in place someplace, that's going to be one of our very high priorities to get that taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know, instead of getting a boat across the river, we're going to get our resources to get our kids, those kids, into a safe shelter and provide notification to mom and dad, hey, they're over here, they're okay. You know, worry about where you're at now.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I wonder if the PTA would be interested in outfitting an emergency pantry and emergency water at the schools. Because what if those kids, can't get home? What
they're
if
already
the school
griping that they have to provide a supply of markers and other things because the classrooms don't have enough of it.
Exactly.
There's got to be at least a handful of kids who are not going to be reunited.
Again, that's going to be, we're going to be identifying something like that. We're going to be identifying the life safety, medical emergency, stuff like that, and that's going to be higher on our priority list to get those kids to safety. Trust us on the ELC part.
Or keep them safe.
The pantry and the water, that's all a great thing, but after, if you put it in today and spend $5,000 or $10,000 on this stuff, I can guarantee you, in 3 years, they're going to move it someplace else. The water's going to be drank, and the food's going to be disseminated to somebody else because they don't
have the funds or the ability to restock and replace
expired
items.
But Randy, how many of you would be available?
Who knows?
We don't know. Look at all how many. They're not even a person per school.
And it's really
no, you're right. But you're absolutely right. We have no idea how many people are going to get the EOC.
That's right.
Because our primary concern is going to be our family. Well, and we know that.
And you guys are going to be, you're atomic. You're all over the metropolitan area. And my grandkids are a 15-minute drive.
Handed the PTA enough to keep.
Their dad is in Hillsboro. Their mom is across the river. And it's a 15-minute drive, but for an old man, that's going to be a long walk. But by God, I'm going to make it.
Well, I know you will.
It's really sad.
In the ER, when it did hit, it was you make sure your family's safe, and then everybody headed in. Whether you were on shift or not, you headed in. Yeah. Because there was no communication, and you just found out who needed to be there and who didn't. A lot of them never went home. They just stayed for 2-3 days.
And that's why we've got two teams of about 36 people, so that hopefully we can get half of one team here. At 9.0, I'm going to be surprised if we get.
You'd be amazed. Especially if it's off duty. If they.
Well, I mean, even if it's off duty or on duty, it's
totally
gonna be
immobile unless you got horses or donkeys. Even motorcycles are going to have a hard time getting around.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go ahead and turn this off and adjourn us. All right.
Well,
it's 7:30.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to tell you one.